Welcome to Bonehead Weekly, and this week we have another not, I'm trying to think of a word because we were just talking about this and I'm not allowed to say those words.
Right before Joe hit record, James called him Grimace, and I was like, so James has called him chubby with poor circulation.
Basically, what? Purple. Yeah, I mean, it could
be. Well, no, and by the way, I want everybody to know that I mean old school Grimace. What most people don't know is Joe has six arms and steals milkshakes.
Yeah, basically. Actually, what happened was, is this is a true story. In high school, I got a purple Nike hat, wore it to school, and I was called Grimace for the next 3 years. I wish there was a better story.
That's a horrible story. I feel really bad for you, Joe. You want me to revisit my high school memories?
No, yeah. It's not even, it wasn't even a derogatory nickname. It never bothered me. It just stuck. No one calls me that now.
They do now.
That's for the chat. Is once again, that's for the listener to decide. Let us welcome somebody who's way better than the three of us. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
You're welcome. I'd ask you how you're doing. I listened to the first few minutes of what we did with Jake last week, and I pissed myself off because I don't actually like asking. That's the stupidest, most mundane question in interviews. Like, how are you doing today? I'm well. Thanks for being here. Yada, yada, yada. Fuck all what? That.
It is.
Barbara.
let's start with this. Barb, can you tell me where my right sock is? Because I am currently barefoot on one foot.
Which foot?
Gremlins.
That's going to be the funny part. It's
Gremlins. It's the only explanation that fits. So
I got up off the couch and I said, where's my sock? And it's not on my foot.
I have a suggestion of where it could be.
No, I wouldn't. No.
Too big.
The sock.
Right. Yeah, no, we all
I have no I have no confidence in that degree.
We all get it there, crusty guy. Keep going, James. Crusty?
Oh, I just assumed it. I didn't assume it was that place. Was that what you're talking about? I assumed it was that place where if it was kicking footballs, he'd know where it was.
Yeah, his ass. If it was up your ass kicking footballs, you'd know where it was at. It's what
every angle was going to lead there. You know that.
So wait, every angle leads to Chad's ass.
I shoved my sock up my own ass.
Dude, I don't judge your lifestyle. Whatever you are, that is perfectly fine.
It could be.
You want me to turn this into a religious moment? We're all made in this image, Chad. It's all right. I mean, you're a freak.
The socks image?
Suffer for it, but yeah, in the socks image. That's why. I got
nothing. Dear God, baby Wilson.
Oh, look at you with Wilson brand socks. I pray at the Church of Irregular.
Irregular. That's right. Clearance socks.
Clearance.
So, Barbara, do you like to be called Barb or Barbara? Because it does say Barb there, but I always call you Barbara. I never call you Barb.
Oh, yeah. The whole Barbara thing is a kind of a long story, but no, I go by either.
Yes, but what do you prefer?
Really, either one.
Hi, Mistress of the West Wind.
I'm going to say Barb because if it's Barbara, I'll start going, I can't even know if I can do the accent. Barbara.
It's an older kind of name. It's an older name. I was named after my grandmother. So.
Oh my God, I was named after your grandmother too.
Well, I'm logging off, guys. I'll see you later.
He's got to go find that sock. That's clearly around his penis.
No, it's clearly out of my ass and into my mouth.
The reason why it's up his ass, if I've learned anything from prison documentaries.
Yeah.
So, Barbara.
Yes.
I think there's two questions I want to ask, and then we're going to get off to our topic, okay?
Okay.
One, this is actually I want to try to be nice for a second. You and I.
Yeah, for a second. Here we go.
For a second. Now, she and I met this.
I real hard October. Now.
Did she say she was real hard now?
I said hard.
He couldn't even make it the full second.
Did you get Chad's sock?
No, seriously, in my one defense of Joe, I thought she said that too.
Oh my gosh.
She's like, I'm real hard now.
Running off.
I would say both of you are really hard of hearing, though, so.
Huh?
Huh?
Yeah, that's what
caused Chad's socks in my ear. That's where it's at.
Okay, now, what's your question, sir?
Well, the first thing is we met in October. We've never met before. And now you're the belle of the ball when it comes to Scarefest, and you're more popular than everyone, and you're the most amazing person and the most amazing person throughout Scarefest. And I'm doing this just to annoy a couple of people. Now, not that I don't think you're amazing. I do have to say, you found the show, picked it up, and all three of us, I'm assuming, because we've talked about it behind your back, really appreciate that you take the time to comment when you are listening and watching. So it's very nice of you. We wish more people.
Algorithms.
Would you say?
Algorithms. The algorithms like comments. So
that's true. But 6 years in, 6.5 years in, actually, we're just happy for feedback. There's a guy that went off on one of my reviews, and he wasn't negative. He was just talking about how Suspiria is great, the remake, the 2018, and yada, yada, yada. And I don't disagree with what he said. I didn't particularly, wasn't overly fond of it, but it was just great to get the feedback that somebody was engaged. So we do appreciate it. And you are always great about sharing the show. Truly want to thank you for all of that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you guys, too, because you know what I end up doing is I get a lot, you've seen a lot more movies than probably I have. So I get a lot of ideas for new movies to watch just by hearing you guys just discuss. So I have a note in my Mac. I'm going to say Mac because it annoys certain someone on the panel here. But on my Mac, under notes, I have like a running list of movies that I want to see that you guys have talked about. So
that's great. That's awesome. We appreciate it. So my first question is,
I recommend, it's funny you said that, I ran into somebody who they're in my department, but I don't talk to them a lot. And I recommended Rubber to them. I don't know if you've heard of Rubber.
Yes. I haven't watched it, but I feel like you talk about a lot of the more obscure movies that noticed. Yeah.
Huh.
Cool. Like not the blockbuster hits, but more something more obscure.
I agree with that.
That's why I'm like jotting my notes down madly. Like, I said that one.
Yeah, well, she was like, it was like a few months ago during Halloween. She's like, we were talking about Halloween. She's like, yeah, every year me and my friends come up with some weird, odd film to watch. And she was like, we're struggling this year. I'm like, oh, let me give you a list. I was like, it's a Rubber, Dead Snow.
Special Dead.
I forgot about Special Dead.
Well, if there was an award for one of the guys that lists movies that I've never seen, Chad would win it. Chad would definitely win that. Because I'm like, I have not seen any of these movies that he's mentioned. So, gives me a nice deal.
Now, in defense of me and Joe, it's because some of them you had to go to a very special theater that was, well, it gets complicated. But anyway.
You have to take your sock.
Yeah.
The sock is the theme.
You have to wear both socks.
Yeah, you need to wear several of them for your protection.
I'm sorry, James, what were you saying?
I was just gonna say it was a certain theater that Paul Rubens frequented for a while. It was
timely humor. I forgot what my
timely.
Second, why on earth did you agree to do this shit on the show?
I love this show.
Oh, we just wanted to hear it again. I'm so sorry. Say it one more time for the angels.
Yes, I love this show. I was someone who loved TV so much as a kid. I think I may have mentioned this to you, Joe. I don't remember. But I loved TV and movies so much as a kid that, do you remember back when the TV guide was like this thick?
Yeah. Oh my God, yeah. I had a collection. I wish I still had.
I kept the ones too, especially of the covers I liked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would go through that. I must have been like 9 or 10. I would go through it with a highlighter for the whole week and highlight all of the things that I wanted to watch. And that's, from what I understand, not normal activity of a 9 or 10 year old.
I had a pen and I did the same thing.
No, really. But you know, I'm amongst my people.
No, they didn't have highlighters in the hall.
Real quick, before I said, you know, one of my highlights of my childhood was I always looked forward to the fall preview TV guide because it was extra thick and it had all the shows, and I would circle which shows I was wanting to watch. Specifically, the cartoons.
Oh, see, I don't think I was really into the cartoons, but I remember having a holy hissy fit because my mom didn't want the TV on and Grease 2 was playing and I was just gaga over. I know. But no. Grease 2 was playing. I like Grease 2 better than the first one.
No, I can't believe we've never had this conversation. Have you probably never got to that because we talked about it on the show. My mom's favorite was Grease 2.
Grease 2, yeah.
So I can sing all the songs from Grease 2 just like this. She had Hayden Caulfield or whatever the guy's name, Maximilian.
Maxwell Caulfield. Mm-hmm.
Maxwell Caulfield. Michael. Hayden Caulfield. That's a literature thing. I'm so sorry, yeah. James.
Yeah, that's you're catching some rye there.
I catch some rye there, but back to what I was saying, Maxwell Coffee. Yeah, mom, man, it's like, let's do it for our country, the red, white, and the blue.
It was great.
All right, so Barbara and I just killed the conversation because we're talking about Grease too.
Sorry. I guess the point is the reason why I love the show so much is because I have loved TV and movies all the way back when I was a kid. So this is just like a natural progression, you know, and I can listen. I prefer to, you guys had the question too, of why would you prefer YouTube over a podcast? I feel like I need to see who's talking and I learn better that way too. I don't learn well. Like if someone was instructing me to do something over a podcast where I'm only hearing and I can't see, I don't do well with that. So I feel like just being able to see you guys as you're talking, as you're bantering, that's better for me. And then I can see facial expressions and everything. So yeah, I'm definitely more of a fan of YouTube, and I will even put it on the cart from YouTube while I'm driving to work. You know, I'll do it that way. I don't know why, but.
Yeah, you beat me to my second question. I was going to ask why the fuck YouTube? Because our YouTube numbers, for some odd reason, for the last few months have just did this while our sound with our
really?
Yeah, I don't know why. And I was curious. The three of us can't explain it because different episodes are popular on different platforms.
Yeah, because with YouTube, who would want to see this?
That's us. I agree with Chad. I mean, that's the reason we're sitting here listening
to you. How stupid I am. I have the gallery view, the view where all four of you all are on top, and I went like this, assuming my finger was going to go across all four of you. It didn't.
Darn technology.
Yeah. And I was not referring to you, Barb. I was referring to us three, not you.
By the way, real quick, just out of idle curiosity, Chad, now what do you do for a living? Does it involve technology? I'm sure it doesn't. We're fine.
It involves a shut up.
Okay, then. Just want to make sure I understood what your job was.
I do appreciate you answering the thing about YouTube. Thank you so much, because it bum fuzzles me. And we have so many different people. And here's the things when people give you advice about creative endeavors, it rarely works. So we have people. Is that King Koopa?
No, that's Junkyard from Toxic Avenger. Toxic Crusaders. Sorry.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get back to it. So you are a friend of mine. We've been friends since October. We met at the last Scarefest. You hit it off. Like, I wasn't exaggerating. You were the belle of the ball. And you run the, please, if I say it wrong, but you run the fan page for Scarefest.
I moderated, so I kind of watched to see if there's any spammers that are trying to get on the page and splash their porn everywhere, or, you know, something like that.
Why would you stop that? I mean, good rules. Work. Good work. We appreciate it. That's what the world needed. Less breasts.
Oh, let's face it. It's not the breasts they're seeing. It's people. It's the men's side. And guys, nobody wants to see it.
Oh.
The what?
It's the guys who are sending the shots of themselves. And
you talking about dick pics?
Yeah.
That's not
Could
it,
you
actually.
Say dick pics?
Is it really women's forums?
No, it's actually in the group chat is where we would see it mostly. And it would be like crotchal shots of the ladies. It's like, what is even happening right now?
Oh, Jesus.
Really? Yeah.
I assumed it was always the other way around.
Well, no. No, and Joe, you're never in there.
No.
So that's why you don't know.
I don't. It'll always, if you go to my messenger, it always says you have blah, 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 or whatever. And it's always highlighted. I'm like, fuck that. There's too many people. I never answer them. I never read them. I never look. Nope. You didn't tell me there was twat shots in it. I might have stopped by for a minute.
By the way, real quick, y'all were talking about our fandom and everything. I just wanted to ask, have y'all checked lately followers are from? I just thought this was apropos to the conversation.
Yeah, I'm sure Barbara cares.
Yeah.
No, I just thought this was funny. And you talked about how our numbers are going up. Joe, I think I've solved the mystery.
On YouTube, they went up. Yeah. What?
Yeah. Well, so Lexington is, as far as cities, is a huge location for us. Georgetown, Louisville, Frankfort, Richmond, Kentucky. And then it jumps to LA.
Oh.
Yeah. And then it goes to Moorhead, Winchester, Berea, and Bangladesh. The DACA division, but Bangladesh. But more important, let's break it down by countries. United States, number one. United States, 460 people follow us from the United States.
Ow.
Algeria is number two.
I don't even know anybody from Algeria.
Algeria, Iraq, Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Australia. And I think we know all the Australians.
I bet you a damn dollar we can name every single Australian that follows us.
We have 9 people following us from Australia. And I'm like, we can guarantee at least 6 or 7 of those.
I could name 5 of them. Ben, you sexy son of a bitch.
I'm sorry. We were talking about numbers and who watches us and why they watch us. And then for some reason, I just clicked on popular locations that follow you, and it gave me that. So I just wanted to share that. Let's go back to the show.
Yeah, let's do our topic.
Yeah. Barbara, sure, why not? It is your
sorry, James.
This is the second time we're doing it. This is the second time we're having what we call normies on here like us. Now, what is your topic? What did you pick?
Before you say it.
Yes.
Yeah, let her talk. Now shut the fuck up.
Because it's leading up to it. Before she said it, when she actually brought it up as an idea, I'm like, this is the damnedest best topic I could ever think of. That could
really?
Ever come up. I love it. I love it.
Oh, good. Yay. Thanks. Yeah,
seriously?
Well, it's one of those where there's just so many, but yes.
Yes, there is so many. Yeah. Go ahead.
And Barbara. You know, it's interesting because for the Nick Cage movies that you guys did, it was 1.5 hours long, and I was like, oh no, it's over. So I had already been wanting like more, not to sound greedy, but yeah, I wanted more Nick Cage. But so the first time I ever saw Nick Cage in a movie, it was Valley Girl. And I know you guys didn't even mention that one, I don't think.
No.
And James, I see you going like, yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I am. Nick Cage is the modern Sir Laurence Olivier. He deserves all the credit in the world because he has done almost every genre of film. Mm-hmm.
He probably has done all the big genres. Yeah, multiple times.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. And honestly, we've talked about Rob Zombie this way. If I go into a Nick Cage film, I know I'm going to get certain things, but I also know I'm probably going to be a little bit surprised. Even though I've seen so many of his films.
Mm-hmm.
So, Valley Girl, though, I have seen Valley Girl. Yeah, I think I've got a copy on my shelf.
I think that may be the only Nick Cage film I haven't seen.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask Chad, do you like the 80s, the whole vibe of the 80s, right?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I think you would like it then. It's like punk rock guy meets Valley Girl, you know, just this.
Yeah, I would definitely watch it. It's never came up. Yeah.
That's your homework.
Yeah, I'll do it too. Well,
I'm going to ask the 80s this.
And fireworks
because I am a completist. I've seen Birdie. I haven't seen Valley Girl.
I saw Birdie. I saw Birdie only a couple of years ago, and I was like, oh my gosh. He took his own, that whole part mm-hmm. with the, did you know the background?
Oh, yeah.
He took
his yeah.
own mm-hmm. Well, talk about it.
Well, it was just that exactly. The Birdie, like he was just like kind of a carefree person in the beginning, right, Chad?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then he went to war.
Mm-hmm. He was different.
Yeah. He came back and he was horribly disfigured. He had to wear, was wearing bandages. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Oh, Birdie's, it's a great film.
It's really, Matthew Modine is in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you would, so last year after, you know, thinking about all the movies that Nick Cage has been in, I said, you know, there's a lot of Nick Cage movies I haven't seen yet. So I was on this, I was making a list of all the ones. And that's when I watched Drive Angry too, get through this list. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll never probably get through all of the list because there are some movies, like I know you guys loved, there was one movie of his that you love that I don't think I'll ever watch. What the heck is it called? Where he plays two people.
Oh, adaptation.
Yeah, I just can't do it.
Oh, that's so good.
I know. I remember you saying that it's so good, but I'm like, I don't know if I can see it just because it's not his normal. It's not what normally I'm drawn to, but I don't know. Maybe I'll step outside the box. And
is it the wig that bothers you? The curly hair?
Yeah, I think it is.
So you're not into nerdy Charlie Kaufman talk.
Not to sound shallow, but yeah.
Totally shallow.
I'm sorry. So anyway, about Valley Girl, I think the reason I did like, because the topic was like Nick Cage, not necessarily a favorite movie of Nick Cage, but maybe favorite Nick Cage moments, or maybe even roles that you've seen him in. So, and I think for me that he was in Valley Girl, it showed this whole acting silly and vulnerable around a girl that's totally not in your normal scene. Like, he's this punk rock and she's more like totally type Valley Girl. And just, I liked him in that role because he was very much would call her out too. You know, James, you saw it. I don't want to give too much away because Chad hasn't seen it, but I liked his role in that. This is going to sound silly, but it was pre-dental. He went and had his teeth fixed later on, and he was just like, this was back, like, raw Nick Cage, like, him going into different casted roles, just the way he was.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I liked who he was in that role, and just the fact that they had him, you know, breaking back into this party to get, you know, to this girl. And also, Joe, you saw it too, right?
Valley Girl? I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And I think I don't even remember scenes from it. So there may very well be that I've rearranged the furniture in my mind that I don't remember any of the plot. It sounds dreadful.
No, it's not though. He's this total punk rock 80s vibe, you know, like, I don't know.
Does he do the voice from Peggy Sue Got Married?
No, but I loved him in that. And I know it drove Kathleen Turner crazy. That's another little trivia. Like, she hated that he made that voice, but he didn't want that role anyway. So anyway, I'm going off like.
No, that's what you're here for. That is what we are here
for. I go off on tangents. Sorry, guys.
Is that your first pick?
No, that's the point of the show.
It's definitely my first pick. Yeah, I had to because it was sentimental. It's the first Nick Cage movie that I had seen him in. And it's great.
Is there a specific scene? So you told us to pick out scenes. Is there a specific?
Yeah. So the scene that probably stands out the most for me is when he's trying to get the girl back and it kind of reminds me of Mannequin a little bit, how what's his name was going and doing all these different jobs.
Andrew McCarthy.
Fired. McCarthy, yes. He keeps going and getting different jobs. That's kind of what Nick Cage's character was doing, Randy. He was getting all these different jobs so that he could be like incognito. And while she's out on dates with her tool of an ex-boyfriend, he's popping up everywhere like, hey, what's going on? And she could tell who it is, but he can't. So that's probably my favorite as far as the Nick Cage scenes in that.
Cool. All right. Who's up next? Who wants?
I'll go. Yeah. So I agree with Joe in that there were so many, and I was honestly struggling because there's just so many to choose from, but I have to go. We've talked about this numerous times. I have to go with one of my favorite Nick Cage movies. And it's one that is kind of not talked about a lot. Weatherman.
Oh, such a good movie.
I absolutely love Nick Cage's performance in Weatherman. He's just this down on his luck. He hates his life. He hates being a weatherman. He's constantly just tortured by even being a TV personality. And it's great. He's just so tortured. So I was trying to find a scene and it was struggling because there are so many great Nick Cage scenes in the 2-hour Weatherman movie. I broke it down to two, and I'll just briefly talk about them. The first is the pie breakdown scene where he's sitting there arguing with this man who, you know, he's asking him about the weather and he just doesn't want to talk about the weather. He's like, I'm not here to talk about it. It's just too much. And he's having a meltdown on this gentleman who just came up and said, you know, hey, what's the weather going to be today? And some guy throws a pie at him, a McDonald's apple pie, and he runs down the street like straight armed. like straight faced, and then he catches up with the car and just has a meltdown on the people who threw the pie at him. It's an amazing scene. There's so many emotions in that, in the 2 minutes that's all happening. And then the other one, the other scene that I absolutely love from Weatherman, and I don't know if you all, I know Joe and James are familiar with it. Barbara, are you familiar with Weatherman at all?
I have seen scenes from it, but I haven't seen the whole movie. No.
Oh, you need to see
it. But I want to now because you talked about this extensively in the last Nick right. Cage segment you guys.
The other scene, and I don't know if these guys will know it, it's the tartar sauce scene. Guys, yeah. You familiar with that one?
Yeah.
James?
Yeah, no, I absolutely know. And he has a...
Go ahead.
I've had that dialogue in my head.
And this is something that, again, that this is something I do. So he's having dinner. They're setting up dinner. And his wife says, hey, we need tartar sauce. He's like, okay, I got it. She goes, do you need to write this down? No, I've got it. And he just keeps walking. So he's Tim walking to the store and he goes, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce. And then a female grabs his attention and he starts talking about what he would do to the woman. And then he keeps going, tartar sauce, tartar sauce, tartar sauce. And then his brain just starts deviating from the whole thing. And then by the time he forgets the tartar sauce and it ends up into a full scale argument with his wife and it's an amazing scene. And again, it just shows Nick Cage because he can, his fast fire, because sometimes he can talk and he talks so fast, but yet you're catching everything that he's saying. It's phenomenal. So yeah, those are my two quick scenes from Weatherman. I can't recommend it enough. It may be one of my top three favorite Nick Cage films.
Sweet. I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. I'll go next. We all love Nick Cage.
What are you doing with your hands?
I don't know.
Put them down.
No.
Put them
Reach
down.
Over to your
it's like
why don't you put that me? Sock?
It's like somebody you're waiting for somebody to throw you a watermelon just so you can shove it right into your mouth.
Is he going to kung fu chop me? Chad, he going to kung fu me?
Yeah.
Now, you listening? We love it when Nick Cage goes all Nick Cage. But the problem is sometimes it's too much Nick Cage. And the movies aren't as good. But one of the best overacting in the movie fucking rocks is every scene he's in Face Off, especially as Caster Troy. And that whole opening scene where he's planting the bomb, starts dancing in front of all the choir girls, and then grabs the girl's ass and then with a crescendo. Priceless.
You know,
Chad, you know a peach? I could eat a peach for hours.
You know what my it's oddly enough with Face Off, my favorite scene from Face Off, and it's one that people don't talk about when they talk about Face Off because they talk about him as Caster Troy.
I know.
But in spoiler, Barb, please tell me you've seen Face Off.
I've seen it. Okay, I've seen good. It. And I think I'm on, this is so funny because I think I'm aligned with what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Well, I think I am too. I wanted to talk about the first one because the second half of the movie's different.
Well, then talk about it and I'll talk about mine. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt
you.
I
wanted to give an example of a Nicolas Cage, Nick Cage, right?
Yeah.
But Nick Cage is a very good actor with a lot of range, and that movie does a great job of demonstrating it. Go Chad, because I think I know where you're going.
I don't know if you all are, because one of the scenes that really hit home with me is it's the very end. The very, very end. They've crashed their boats. Caster Troy, who's now John Travolta, is like going, you know what? I'm not going to let you win. So he takes a piece of glass and starts cutting at his face because he doesn't want him to have his face back. And he shoots, is it the harpoon gun, right? He shoots the harpoon gun at him and kills him. And his sheer terror in his face and pain and anguish of what this man has done to his life.
With the screaming, yeah.
Yeah, with the screaming, Nicolas Cage captures it in about a millisecond. It's phenomenal. That's still my favorite scene to Face Off to this day.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I know everyone loves him as Caster Troy, but I actually liked when he was playing
John Travolta.
John Travolta.
Yeah. Nobody remembers John Travolta's actual name. It's Sean something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Sean something. That's right. But I liked that it was kind of a more vulnerable role where he just switched. But he has said in interviews, he has said, like, oh, I only played Caster Troy up until until the end, and he says, then I was all about, you know, playing John Travolta's character. He said, one of these days I would love to play Castor Troy all the way through. But I was one of those that just did, I liked the opposite.
I love the fact that he captured John Travolta. Exactly. Now, John Travolta tried, and he, for the most part, he did an okay job of playing Nicolas Cage.
They're both really good in that.
He is, but he didn't capture Nicolas Cage. Like, he was doing an impersonation of Nicolas Cage, where I thought Nicolas Cage captured all of John Travolta's mannerisms, his reflection of speech. I thought it was phenomenal. I'm not spitting on John Travolta. He did a great job.
More pussy than John Travolta played him at the first of the movie.
Yeah. True.
That's my critique. But Face Off is actually probably one of the last best practical effect action films. There's no CGI in that, to my knowledge.
Right.
Right about that?
By the way, Bart, was I right? Was the scene I was talking about, was that the one you thought I was on?
I think there's multiple ones throughout where he's having to deal. And that's the reason I said, I shouldn't be condescending, but he's a little bit more of a wuss. And then I think Travolta plays the same character at the beginning, but he has to do, you know, the fact that the loss of his wife is now sleeping with the enemy, literally.
Yeah, I mean,
what I was talking about, the range. He does because a really good job with the range.
He was all planning of, this is going to be simple. I'm going to go back to my normal self in a matter of hours, maybe a day or two. And then he finds out, oh no, my whole identity's gone. How am I going to get it back? And then that's what tears. I mean, I never thought of it as being a whiny or wussy. It's just like, oh God, what happens now?
Well, and he kind of was just, not to keep using the word vulnerable, but I can't think of another one to replace it.
It's better than pussy. It's better when I said.
when he was in the prison and he had to kind of pick a fight with someone, and you could see that he was like, whoo. But then he turned his head and he's like, he wanted to cry because he didn't want to hurt someone. He didn't want to hurt another human being. And see, I just liked him better in that role. But then again, I've crushed on Nick Cage since the 80s. So
James.
James, have you crushed on Nick Cage?
I mean, in all fairness, there's actors that I'll watch in just about anything. Christopher Walken, Christina Ricci, but Nick Cage is... He just take the ride. I mean, I've never, like, the movie that I keep telling Joe and Chad to watch that you can tell when the money ran out.
James, I can't. I tried, but buddy, in all fairness, I tried. And that's more than I can say for you when I've given you movie recommendations.
Well, it's the fact that I can't find them unless I go to Bulgaria, Chad, makes it really hard.
which movie is it?
Oh, Isle. What is it, Chad?
Grand Isle.
Grand Isle. Have you seen Grand Isle?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so I'll very quickly, Chad obviously hasn't watched it. Did you watch any of it? You watched the beginning?
No, I watched about 20 minutes of it, man, and I could not get through it.
You were only 20 more minutes and you would have saw when the money ran out.
I know,
so
but
the true story behind this, because I had to look it up because I was watching, I'm like, dude, this could have built to something. This could have been an Oscar type performance. He plays a Vietnam vet. His wife is basically, let's just say, a loose woman, but he can't perform sexually anymore.
Hold on. To Joey Pants, who will be at Lexington Comic Con, she's a hoo.
Yeah, pretty much. And this guy that's a handyman hits their fence and basically says, listen, instead of you suing me or whatever, I'll come back and repair it. And they're in Grand Isle, which is a real place, I guess, outside of Louisiana, or in Louisiana, but it floods easily. And it's raining, and he gets trapped there, and he has to, quote-unquote, stay the night. And the wife keeps coming on to him, and Nick Cage is getting, like, he's just seething the entire time. And he's sitting in this chair, and he's telling war stories. And it's really, like, it's uneven from the very beginning. Oh, but you're like, oh, man, this could lead to somewhere. And then, I kid you not, 40 minutes in, you can tell, oh, they ran out of money. And if you read the making of the movie, literally... they got Nick Cage, which was their big get, and it was going to be the small independent film, and one of the backers pulled out after they started filming, and they didn't have it under contract, so they couldn't sue the backer to get the money to finish, so they basically just ended. The tone of the movie changes completely, and it ends up with him, like, having Nick Cage ends up, the police come and all this stuff, but there's a building subtext as the movie goes along that there's something in the basement. You don't know what's going on in the basement and all of this stuff. And this kid, of course, this repairman just wants to get out of there, but he can't. And it looks like it could have built something. So the first 30 or 40 minutes, I was like, oh, this, it was uneven, but I was like, this could lead to something. And then when it got to the last 30 minutes, I'm like, I don't know what happened. And so I had to look it up to be find out, like, because I'd never heard of it. And then I watched it and I was like, it could have been something, but you can totally tell, oh, they ran out of money. And what's the quickest way to end your movie? Oh, the cops show up and there's a shootout.
Oh, no.
But it does have, like, it tries to build to something, and then they just ran out of money. And they're like, ah, screw it, we'll shoot it, have a shootout at the end. And it's almost like Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where it's like, ah, we'll throw police at it. We'll see what happens.
There's a lot of movies out there where it looks like one director started it and another director ended it. What happened here? So
yeah, no, I told the guys they need to watch it just simply because I need other people to see it and be like, okay, no, yeah, it could have been something. And Nick Cage is still Nick Cage. Like, the scenes where he's going off as a Vietnam vet and he's got the kid in the room, like, it's uncomfortable because he's like, you don't know what I've been through, what I've done, and what I'm still willing to do. So
is that your pick?
No.
Well, what's your pick? Because it's your turn.
Oh, I didn't know it was my
turn. So much on the editing floor.
I'm not cutting any of this shit.
No, I mean, my go-to, and again, I've said this before on the show, but I watched it at just the right time. I was exhausted. I was burnt out. I was really, quite frankly, hating my life at that point. And I read a Nick Cage movie from Blockbuster. Look it up, kids. Anyway, and the scene that I have, and I'm sorry, Joe. I'm sorry. I'll get there, Buttercup. I know you're antsy. You go take your back pills. The scene that got to me, and the scene that I think he does the best, because he's building up, it amps up, and then he has this entire line where he says, I wash my face with three kinds of soap, each smelling like a different season. And he goes off on this redemptive thing where he's like, oh, this is, and he ends this monologue by saying, I felt like I saved someone, but I don't know who. Yeah. He more or less saved himself. And it's from Bringing Out the Dead. Mm-hmm. After he's, I mean, he more or less, she doesn't necessarily want him there. He almost breaks into this woman's house and he needs to sleep. He's exhausted. He's been running. He's drinking all the time. He's doing all these different things. And he just has that moment of, you know, I wash my face with three different kinds of soap. I'm finally getting to relax. I'm not having to respond to an emergency call. I'm not having to. And he just has this moment. And I think that is one of the cooler Nicolas Cage scenes because it is the exact opposite. True. I mean, that movie has tons of him freaking out appropriately in that film. But it also has that really quiet moment where he finally gets that moment of, I get to sleep. I get to wash my face and I don't have to think about who dies next. And it's a cool, subtle scene.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. And Joe, I don't know about you, but James and I, that's one of our top favorite Cage films, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it. Since
and it's one of my favorite Scorsese films too.
And I need to go back.
I'm going to be honest. When I saw that, I watched that in segments, that hour and a half that you guys did of the last Nick Cage movies that you liked. And as you said, Bringing Out the Dead, I literally yelled out, "What?" Let me fast forward amazing. Though and say. At first, I was like, what? What are you talking about? Why? Because that was a movie that we had on DVD and we gave it away because we're just like, this movie sucks so bad. But that aside, when I hear people saying exactly why they like a movie so much and it's the polar opposite of how I feel, it makes me curious to go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and honestly, the situation that I was dealing with is weird. But I had a student, I was working on campus at the time, and I had a student that literally that night had been carted away with alcohol poisoning. And I had stayed up writing the report, so I didn't get to watch the movie till about 2 a.m. in the morning. I had just written this long report, and of course, I've got so much adrenaline through me, I can't sleep, and I'm watching Bringing Out the Dead.
Right.
And it just hit at just the perfect time where I'm like, oh, man, I mean, this is the closest I've ever felt like I could be Nick Cage. Like I was burnt out. I was thinking, why do I keep doing this? And it worked for me in that moment. And every time I watch it now, I notice other things. And I think in some ways he's done quote unquote horror movies, but I think it's also, if you watch it as a horror movie, if you assume the ghost that he sees are real, it becomes this really dark horror movie too, where he can't escape from the people he can't save.
And I was gonna bring that up, but I figured James was going to. I will say that quick that his scene is the best scene in the film, but second best is the vitamin B cocktail where he's with Tom Sizemore and they're like getting drugged out and they are completely overacting each other. Like, who's going to win that race? Tom Sizemore, Nick Cage, and Nick Cage wins, but
always,
always.
Well,
I think Tom Sizemore was doing a little method acting.
Yeah, oh. No, I'm pretty sure Tom Sizemore was too. But you know, it's also really funny because it does have some weird, like, I won't say comedy scenes, but the entire IB banging scene where they're bringing the gangbanger back from the dead and he's passed out, and you know, his Ving partner Rhames. For that night, Ving Rhames goes, who is this sinner? IB banging. No, what's his real name? I don't know. We all call him IB banging. Have mercy on IB banging and bring him back to us, oh Lord. Well, meanwhile, Nick Cage is the one that is having to pump him full of the medicine to bring him back. So this guy can have his Jesus moment.
I have got to go back and rewatch it. I don't remember anything of it. I saw it in the theater at Moorhead, Kentucky, at Moorhead State University, and I didn't connect with it at the time, and now.
Like, would you, Jane? I didn't have the personal connection, but when I saw it, it floored me. I was like, between that or Casino, that's maybe one of my top two favorite Scorsese films.
Really, Casino over Goodfellas?
Oh yeah, I prefer Casino over Goodfellas.
I'm going soft though. I can't watch it now.
Had this conversation.
No.
Yeah, Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci in that.
But they're in the other one too.
I know, but they do a better. They act. Their acting is better in Casino.
And it's your hatred of Ray Liotta, isn't it?
I love Goodfellas, don't get me wrong, Joe, but I prefer Casino.
You're the one. Oh,
Casino is really good.
Yeah. You're the two.
Love it. Yeah.
You're the two.
It's hard to watch now, though. I feel like as I get older, like I know I watch horror movies, but violence and horror, it doesn't always have to be commingled. It sometimes horror can be the call is coming from inside the house, you know, which is the best kind of horror, really.
Oddly enough, you mentioned that. For some reason, I've been going back and listening to old M.R. James stories, and he was an academic, but he was known for writing these horror stories for Christmas. And I listened to one today that shouldn't work. It's almost absurd. It's about a room 13 in this hotel, and there's not a room 13, but this guy keeps seeing room 13. And all I could keep thinking is, Stephen King had to have read this. I'm sure he has. Because M.R. James is pretty well known for his horror. He's been dead for, I don't know, 100 years now. But like, I was listening to it, and I'm like, you couldn't film it because it wouldn't work being filmed because you have to be able to move everything constantly. Like the way he describes this door appearing and then not being there and then reappearing and then hands coming out of it to pull things toward them. But it works so well, and there's not a moment of violence in it. There's just... like the most extreme thing is hands coming out of a dark room that wasn't there a moment ago.
And sometimes that's terrifying enough.
Yeah, because it's absurd. It's not logical. But if you have that half a second thought of what would I do if all of a sudden a door opened next to me and something was trying to pull me in? I don't know what I'd do. I'd be like, well, that door wasn't there a moment ago. I probably should call someone. Right? So I agree. Sometimes the violence doesn't work as much as, well, that's disconcerting.
Yep.
All right, Barbara.
Barbara, you're second.
It's me again. So Drive Angry is not a movie that is one of my favorites, but again, it's the topic is more about what favorite moments. There's an improv moment that Nick Cage does, and it knowing that now that it's an improv moment makes me wonder how many other moments and like movies that he did that with, where he just took the rein and the director's like, fine, we'll keep it. But anyway, in Drive Angry, there was a scene in the... Have you guys all seen Drive Angry?
Oh, of course. Real quick, let us drop... So not only have we seen it, but the director is Patrick Lussier. We had him on the show. And the writer is Todd Farmer from Kentucky, who has been on the show multiple times.
Okay. So as far as...
Obviously, she's not watching all of our shows.
I haven't got there yet. There's only so many hours in a day, Joe.
You're like Mick. Mick doesn't want to listen to any of our interviews. He only wants us to do topics. You skip all the interviews and go right to the topics.
That's interesting that you say that because I have been kind of skipping the interviews. not intentionally. I didn't even realize I was doing it.
It's okay.
But I like when you guys do movie topics and you guys do kind of like going around the panel.
Yeah.
all of you and saying, oh, okay, this is my favorite. Okay, this is my favorite. I don't know. I think I'm more drawn to those. And that's not to say I won't watch the interviews, okay. But
you yeah. probably won't call me up on a Sunday night or a Monday morning screaming at me, I'm not going to listen to another fucking interview. When are you just... Now, he hasn't done it in a while, but keep going.
Although I have messaged you like, when are you putting it out?
You did it yesterday, dear.
I know.
You did it yesterday.
Like, it's 4 o'clock. Where's my video?
I appreciate the interest, but you did it yesterday.
Very enthusiastic.
You are a glutton for punishment. So anyway, back to
you. So anyway, Drive Angry, the diner scene. He's just standing there, you know, this obviously this waitress is finding him attractive, and she mm-hmm. wants to shoot her shot. Mom
is what you kids say these days.
I'll shoot your shot. But anyway, so she's like, hey, aren't you going to ask when I'm getting off shift? And all of a sudden, he just grabs her hand, and he's like just talking to her, but doing some kind of weird thing with her hand. And he's asking, oh, who's, you know, that car out there? Whose car is that? And she's like, oh, that's, you know, the other waitress. That's her car. And all of a sudden, he just grabs her and like kisses her kind of dirty. And he says, like, I told you to bring me sugar. I don't know. I just love that scene. It's so Nick Cage, and the fact that he took it upon himself to just like grab her hand and be all weird. He's like magnificently eccentric. And I love that. It's
yeah, great. But that's there's one thing for you're a lady, right?
Yeah. There's that one was
thing,
hot.
Oh, okay. So if you are at the after party.
Okay.
Mr. Lexington Comic Con at the thing across the way. What's it called again? Live Street. Lex Live.
Lex
Live. And someone does that to you, I don't think it goes over as well.
No. it's movies. Anything.
That's what I'm saying. In reality,
yeah.
If some guy just goes kisses you dirty, how does someone kiss someone dirty? How do you kiss someone clean? That's the question I had in my head, but then this other one popped up of
that's your thing, Barbara. Away, when she pulled away, that's her true reaction was like, because I don't think he was even supposed to kiss her in that moment. I could be corrected if I'm wrong here.
No, we should ask Todd next time we have him on the show.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that whole situation was improvised, and I don't know, which sometimes you get the best scenes from that.
Well, and if I'm misremembering, guys, correct me, but didn't we learn from, it was either Todd or Patrick Wan told us that he wanted to, that's a film he was going to shave his head and permanently tattoo, right?
Oh, he wanted to put a permanent tattoo on his head. And they, yeah. I think it was, I can't remember if it was the studio or the agent told him, please talk him out of this.
Oh.
Yeah, because he was going to tattoo the flames coming down the front back of his head forward and do it permanently.
He is like, so
that's how much he wanted to commit to that film, which I was like, said, do it.
No, Bam Bam Bigelow already had that. You can't take it from him.
Real quick, Chris Alexander was the editor for Fangoria for many, many years. We've had him on the show and Tony Timpone. Go listen to his. He actually has my favorite Nick Cage story.
Yeah, visiting Nick Cage at home.
Yeah.
Take it back.
Wait, what was his name?
Chris Alexander. I'll text it to you later if you can't remember. Okay. Don't worry about writing it down.
I'm taking notes.
Don't take notes. You'll love that one, though.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you'll love it. Even if you want to skip ahead to the Nick Cage story, it's worth it just for the Nick Cage story.
Okay, cool.
Chad.
I'll take it.
All right, so my next pick, again, it's one of those ones where it shows his range. Like Weatherman, Bringing Out the Dead, they show his range. But Matchstick Men.
That's a good movie.
I absolutely love it, and I love his performance in it. And again, it just shows his full range of his... It shows his psychotic natures, and also how he can actually just pull a drama scene right out of it. But again, you have to pick one scene for this episode. I want to pick the panic attack scene where Sam Rockwell visits him at his home. And he just had a full night of his OCD kicking in, making sure everything was meticulous. And he's just completely out of his mind. And Sam Rockwell comes in and torments him, like, by throwing chips on the floor, not taking his shoes off. And you just see Nick Cage just start twitching and going absolutely insane because he's struggling with this psychological disorder. And it's phenomenal. I mean, it's three. And of course, again, if you had to ask me who's some top five favorite actors, Nick Cage, Sam Rockwell in one movie, boom.
Directed by Ridley Scott.
Directed by Ridley Scott, nonetheless. It's one of those movies that doesn't look like a Ridley Scott film either. But yeah, I love that scene. And if you want to give us the scene where he's having an absolute meltdown at the pharmacy because he doesn't have his pills. His placebo pills. Yeah. But yeah, I just loved watching him in that movie. And to pick a scene, it would be the panic attack scene. It's near the beginning of the film where he can't control it. He's just having a mental breakdown.
Yeah, that was well done.
Yep.
All right.
Joe.
I'm going to go for Subtle Nick Cage. One of the best performances, if probably the best performance. Yeah, I'm going to go with this. Maybe my favorite role is him and Pig.
Yep. It's on my list.
Yeah. The scene I'm going to specifically pick out, and I cannot do it verbatim. I can't, is when we finally, as the plot
spoiler.
Starts to, huh?
Spoiler. Yeah.
Spoiler. Yeah. Well, if you haven't seen Pig, check it out. You'll
please
love
do.
It.
It's amazing.
I need to.
And it's a very subtle movie that has a really, actually, and I don't mean this in derogatory, has a really good plot. Mm-hmm. And as you pick up things as you learn more about the character, it's the scene where he's finally at the restaurant, the fancy restaurant, and he's sitting there with blood on his face, and he's all he wants is his truffle pick, which is a funny plot device to begin. Like, who in the hell wants to watch it? But if you watch it in context, it's brilliant.
Yeah, because not to interrupt you, but you hear the plot of the movie. If you don't know anything about it, it's Nicolas Cage hunting for his truffle pig.
Yep.
And you're like, the hell am I going to watch that for? That's insert. But it's so much more than that.
It is so much more than that. And he is sitting there and the chef sits down and finally figures out that this guy is a, I don't know, Michelin star chef, right? Let's say that. He remembers him. He remembers when he fires him. He starts going through it and you start realizing just how prestigious this is. It's all subtle and how he doesn't want to hurt anybody. He doesn't want to be around anybody. He just wants his truffle pig back.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And then when he finds out later of what happened to the pig.
That was my favorite scene. Devastating. Other than when he just breaks apart the man who, you know, he considers him, he has a fancy restaurant. He just says, well, wait, you know, it breaks him down like that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, yeah. Sorry.
What I'm saying. And he sits there and he remembers it because he worked for him and he fired. Yeah. And it's a very subtle performance. And to me, I don't know. I love Mandy. And Mandy's a really good movie.
Don't spoil it for James. I think it's one of, I'm guessing.
I'm sure there's some great scenes, but I don't know. Pig, man. Pig should have, I know he got
it. Should have won an Oscar. It
should have won an Oscar for Pig. Have you never seen it, Barbara?
I have not.
Oh,
the last movie that I saw was The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I actually really liked that one.
I liked it, but it's not as good as Pig. You make that a priority.
Okay, watch I will. Pig. I'm writing it down. I'm taking notes.
No, I was about to say, but I agree about The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Yeah.
It was so fun that I think I need to see. That was actually the last movie I saw with my dad, I think. Yeah. He's not with us anymore. But yeah, so that movie.
He moved to France?
In a manner of speaking.
We're sorry. We're terrible people, but we were all three thinking it. It's just Chad and I have less impulse control.
Big goddamn Jerry Lewis fan, is he?
Yeah. Couldn't take it anymore. Moved to Algeria. That's that motherfucker that keeps listening to us.
I thought it was fun.
Letters from Algernon.
Yeah, no, I agree. Actually, A Barrel Weight of Massive Talent. Like, there's two films that I will hold up and say actors playing versions of themselves work really well as. It's that one.
Yes. I bet he couldn't wait to do it.
And then it's the other one's Free Enterprise, where William Shatner makes fun of William Shatner for an hour and a half. But I agree. And I think what's really funny about that, though, is it is a really, like, there's parts of it that are really funny, but it still has this weird heart to it.
It does.
Where you're just like, man, he's right. No matter what he does, he's kind of. Plus, anytime you can get Neil Patrick Harris and Nick Cage on screen together, I'll watch it.
So for the second time in a row, James, is that your pick?
No. No, is it my turn?
Yep.
Is it really? Okay. I'm amazed nobody brought this up, because I remember watching it and I thought, man, it's a weird combination, because Nick Cage is doing it as kind of a shtick and an allusion to somebody else that has done that type of character. But then the closing, the end of him playing that character is so impactful. I was thinking for this topic, I was like, I'm going to have to end up bringing up Big Daddy.
Yep.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It was on my list, too.
In Kick-Ass. There, I said it. Chad, are you happy?
Yeah, no.
He's never said kick before.
Now I don't have to worry about my list, because I have one left, and none of you all are going to pick it, so I'm good.
But the entire scene in, like, all the build-up, I love the scene with, Hit Girl in the diner, whatever. What do you want for your birthday? And she does the entire, I want a puppy and I want a Bratz doll. And he goes, oh, really? And then, no, I'm just effing with you. I want, a gun. Oh, goes on child. To describe the gun. Yeah. Oh, child. And he's doing Adam West. He's Nick Cage doing a version of Adam West doing Batman playing Big Daddy.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that. Yeah. I mean, I saw it long ago, but I didn't realize that.
You didn't realize he was doing Adam West?
I didn't realize that. No.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I feel like I need to rewatch.
I don't think I knew it at the time. It was later that
he's doing the 60s Batman, Adam West, all that stuff. And then, but that his final scene he's dying. And he's, what do I have to do to keep her going? What do I have to do to keep her going? In that last scene when he's quote unquote saved, but not really. And they have that exchange where he's kind of doing that, for lack of a better term, you've got to go on speech.
Yep.
And it's just, I mean, it goes from being this over the top, weird to, that's a moment of real heart where he's like, yeah, I've trained her to do all this. I've done all this. And him shouting orders as he dies to make sure she's going to make it is, I don't know. Quite frankly, now that I have kids, it means that much more to me. Like, I watch it now and I'm like, man, could I do that? I don't want my kids hurt, but could I be like, ow, 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 hold on, kids, let me take care of that for you, right? I don't know, but it means more now than it did the first time I watched it. So I couldn't not bring up Big Daddy. Well, awesome. Kick-Ass, where he plays Big Daddy. I don't want people to run out and rent Adam Sandler films going, I didn't even know
that's exactly
Cage
what's
going to
happen. This is the worst Nicolas Cage movie I've ever seen. It's got Adam Sandler in it.
Actually, so I didn't know Nick Cage could do that good of an Adam Sandler impersonation. That is amazing. Nick Cage is Adam Sandler.
Actually, he's playing
a kid. I'd watch that movie right now if somebody told me. They're doing a movie where it's basically Face Off 2, except Nick Cage has to act like Adam Sandler and full Rob Schneider. That's the entire plot to the film. He has to fool Rob Schneider into believing he's actually Adam. I'd watch that movie. You heard me, Hollywood. Let's make it.
All right, Barbara. It's
well. Do
gotta
I have to
bring us
up?
Home?
Are we? Is this the last one?
We can do honorable mentions, or you can talk a little bit more. But we're only going to do three because James will just keep going.
Okay, James.
I'm talking with James.
I'm talking about. All right, I'm going to mention two. Then the first one is Moonstruck, which I don't know if you guys would have even been into. It's a rom-com.
I've seen Norman Jewison's Moonstruck, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So I guess whole rant, it's like a 4 or 5 minute rant where he's like, bring me the knife, bring me the big knife.
What the head of my
and he's like, I lost my hand. I lost my bride. Johnny has his hand. Johnny has his bride.
Yep.
And it was just so like intense and he's just so dramatic. And I'm like, I just love this. I could just watch this on a loop. And did you know that Cher specifically wanted him, said she was not going to do the movie unless she could get Nick Cage on there with her?
No, I didn't know that. Why is that?
She liked, well, like, Jake is confirmed. She watched Peggy Sue Got Married, and she told Nick Cage that it was like watching a 2-hour car accident. He's like, well, then why did you want me on the movie with you? And she's like, I just wanted, she felt like Ronnie, the character of Ronnie, was a tortured soul, and that she felt like he would be best in that role. So just a little trivia.
I did not know that. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. And then the second one I had was Wild at Heart, which I watched this movie. I think I was 17 when I watched it, like, or almost 17. And I just thought it was so, as a, you know, I hadn't seen a weird movie like that since, well, Rocky Horror Picture Show, since I was younger. It was kind of had that weirdness to it. That, but this like erotic, weird, whatever. I don't know what category would even really fall in.
Oh, I agree with you.
It's a David Lynch category.
Yes, David Lynch is just all on his own. It's just a category all his own. But my favorite line, and I even wrote it out so that I wouldn't say it wrong. Did I ever tell you that this here jacket represents a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom?
Yeah, I saw that movie way too young. I saw it when it came out, 12, 13. And
you were younger than I was.
Yeah, because it came out in 1990. I think it won the Palme d'Or, actually. It can too. It's that's one I need to go back and revisit and see how 45-year-old me adjusts to it. But I love this, talking about the jacket.
It's so weird. I love it. Yeah. And okay. So the other thing I was gonna say is his character in this is how I picture how he would be in real life. That eccentricities, like the that character, don't you think?
Maybe. She's not a friend, but she's somebody I know from the convention. She works out, and her name's Megan Fisher. She's an actress. She's from Frankfurt, but she does a lot of work in Atlanta. She does a lot of extra work on Walking Dead, and she also bartends at some nerd bar. It basically, Ming Chen's one of the owners from that, and she talks about him coming in there a lot. Nick Cage hitting on him.
Oh, cool. Wait, did you say hitting on her?
That was her story.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I wish he'd come hit on me. I wish I had a good Nick Cage hitting on me story going.
I'll be honest. Do Chubbies we have any
represent my belief in?
Yeah, but I don't have any good anybody hitting on me stories. Even my wife's on the fence.
Oh, no. I mean, she's only on the fence about you, bud.
I know.
She's very demonstrative in what she wants. Chad, break me up here.
Yeah,
I've read your blog.
Agreed.
Dude. It's a vlog. I like to video it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
Who's next?
It's Chad. He's about to tell us his third pick that no one ever, ever, ever is going to pick.
Well, because it came out last year.
Oh.
And I don't want to spoil too much for you all, because I'm sure, I don't know if I don't think any of you all have seen it. It's Dream Scenario.
No.
I wanted to see it, and it left theaters before I got a chance.
Yeah, I saw it.
Thanks for bringing it up, Chad. Yeah. I'm going to go punch the wall.
I saw it the Friday it came out. Dream Scenario, if you're not familiar with it, it's about this man. He's basically nobody. He teaches at a college.
You're all right.
That sums me up. I'm a nobody that teach at a college. It's the first time I felt represented.
But you know, he wants to be somebody, but he can't. And then suddenly, just one day, he just starts showing up in people's dreams.
Right.
No explanation. He just
cool.
He's just in every single body, every person across the world's dreams. He's usually just standing there. Well, there's one scene in particular, and the guys are not going to be shocked by this at all. And I don't want to give too much away because I know none of you all have seen it. I don't want to ruin the movie for you. But there's a scene where one of the women who he's been in her dream, they get in contact, and she specifically wants to recreate the scene in the dream that he's in with her. And
he knows he's in the dreams.
Yeah, he knows at this point that he's in everybody's dreams. There's no explanation as to why, but he just keeps showing up in everybody's dream. And he again, because he wants to be somebody, he takes her up on the offer. So he goes to her apartment to recreate this scene from the dream that he's in. And of course, not only is he a nobody, but he can't he just doesn't have the courage to do anything. So it's him dealing with all the nervousness of doing this specific scene. And then there's also, let's just say, a series of flatulence that occurs. And it's all about him having this breakdown of going, I want to do this, but I don't, I can't do it. And then he gets the nervous farts, and it's about him just slowly having this, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. You know, Nicolas Cage.
Is that ever not funny, right?
The whole awkwardness of the scene of just Nicolas Cage just trying to get to do this one thing, and he can't do it. It's phenomenal. Yeah, he doesn't say a whole lot. It's all like body gestures and grunts and it's perfect. It's one of my favorite Nicolas Cage scenes. So yeah, because these guys took care of all the other ones. I got to mention Dream Scenario yet again because I really did enjoy the film last year. It was one of my top 10 favorite films.
Awesome.
Actually, top five.
It's on my list. I have added it.
Yes. You had two. You had two films last year. You had that, and then The Opposite, Retirement Plan, which was ugh.
Wait, who was in Retirement Plan?
It was Nicolas Cage.
Oh, it was.
It was dreadful.
Oh, see, there's
no Grand Isle, sir.
Hard to swallow. So yeah, some of his movies.
And it had such a huge cast in it too. Like Ron Perlman was in it, and I'm blanking on the many other great cast that was in Retirement Plan, and it did not go well.
You do wonder sometimes the director what they're thinking.
Yeah,
when they put some of these out.
I'll be honest. I would jump into it going, wait, I get to direct Nick Cage and Ron Perlman. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, honestly, that would be my problem. I'd be like, I get to hang out with these people on set. I don't care. It's for a toilet paper commercial. You say, yep, it's going to be the best one I can make. Let's go.
All right,
Joe.
I was trying to do the thing from Gone in 60 Seconds, but I can't do it.
Yes.
But I'm not going to pick it. I don't care for the movie.
I know you don't.
I know. It's okay. Here's the movie.
Why do you hate Robert Duvall so much?
I don't. But here is the... Actually, Robert Duvall has one of my favorite lines I've ever heard. It's completely sexist, but he said it non-jokingly. There's nothing worse for an old man than an old woman.
Oh. And that's a scene you wanted to...
No, it's just a line that Robert Duvall said in real life that is stuck in my head. Yes, that's not from a movie. That was him being serious. There's nothing worse than for an old man than an old woman.
Yikes.
Yeah. Anyway.
I wish he didn't know that. I like him.
I like him too. We've talked about this on the show. Separate the art from the artist. Now.
Yeah. It was also, what was the Bill Murray film? Saint Vincent. Is that what it is?
With Robert Duvall?
No, this is completely different. It's along the same lines. So Saint Vincent, Bill Murray, the director cast a woman who, you know, is a little older as his wife, and Bill Murray goes to the director and goes, can't you hire somebody who doesn't look that old?
Bill Murray's something else.
But the director pointed out, she's the same age as you.
I've never heard that story before. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, you should look it up.
So, I think it's either Moonstruck or this one is how I got introduced to Nick Cage. And I absolutely love the one I'm going to talk about. It's one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite Coen Brothers films. It's the whole opening sequence. Is all H.I. McDonough, played by Nick Cage, doing narration of Raising Arizona.
I was wondering if Raising Arizona would be brought up.
Raising Arizona is one of my favorite movies.
Nicolas Cage is almost a perfect narrator because Weatherman, adaptation where he narrates is phenomenal.
The opening of Raising Arizona is so fucking good that the rest of the movie is always trying to catch up to the opening 15 minutes. Now, it's almost 15 minutes before the credits roll of Raising Arizona. Go back. You probably is like, oh, that movie is hilarious. Go back. I'm almost positive it's almost 15 minutes before the credits roll of Raising Arizona.
Oh yeah.
Sets up
you
the
know
whole
what, you guys,
plot.
We need a movie night where we just watch Nick Cage movies.
Aren't
I'm
you
just
going to be
saying.
In town next month?
What's up?
Aren't you going to be in town next month?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So
yeah,
is James.
Next month and April.
You and James can hang out. Chad and I are going out to Lover's Lane.
What?
You wear the lipstick this time, man. I'm not doing it.
Do I get to pick where I wear it?
What?
Oh,
either way, Chad, eventually
maybe.
You're wearing it. Either way, Chad, eventually you're wearing it. You know he doesn't buy the good color stay stuff.
Yeah, no.
No.
And Joe said, bring the sock.
Get it. No. Oh, my God. I almost said something. Let the juices flow. But I didn't say it, so we're good.
Oh, yeah, no.
Now,
nobody ever heard that.
No one ever heard that. James.
You know, y'all were talking about narration. I'm torn.
No, we weren't.
I was torn.
Yes,
like Natalie and Bruglia. Because there's a ton of other ones that I thought about talking about. But then y'all brought up narration. And it's not the scene, but the opening narration he does for this movie, which is getting, I guess, a sequel, deserves more credit. There are over 550 million firearms in worldwide circulation. That's one firearm for every 12 people on the planet. The only question is, how do we arm the other 11?
Yep.
The narration, though, the line of dialogue that I love from this movie is basically the closing. It's not the closing. It's not the final, but it's awful close. The reason I'll be released is the same reason you think I'll be convicted. I do rub shoulders with some of the most vile, sadistic men calling themselves leaders today. But some of these men are the enemies of your enemies. And while the biggest arms dealer in the world is your boss, the President of the United States, who ships more merchandise in a day than I do in a year, sometimes it's embarrassing to have his fingerprints on the guns. Sometimes he needs a freelancer, like me, to supply forces he can't be seen supplying. So you call me evil, but unfortunately for you, I'm a necessary evil. Lord of War, before I got to see it, somebody literally went, you're not going to go see that, are you? Yeah, I plan on it. It's a Nick Cage film. My husband wanted to see it, and I wouldn't let him go because I saw the opening, and I saw how it starts, and I said, you're not going to see that movie. And I said, you know, you're just making me want to see it that much more. And it is a brutal opening. It's a terrifying opening. Where you follow a bullet through production, and then that bullet ends up in the trailer going into a kid's head.
Yep.
It's painful. The entire rest of that movie is exactly what that narration says. There's people like that that exist, and allegedly they actually consulted with those people to help make the movie more accurate. And the fact that we're getting a follow-up, 20 years later? When did that come out?
I don't know.
I'll look it up while you talk.
Yeah, but I mean, so Lord of War is, I mean, he's an arms dealer. He is Tony Stark in the first 20 minutes of Iron Man without redemption, without the injury, without he is enjoying doing, and he finally gets caught. It's 2005, so yeah, it'll come out almost 20 years after it. We'll get the sequel. But I think it's one, a lot of people hate the film. They thought it was brutal, but it is brutal. But he's an arms dealer. And he's an unrepentant arms dealer who knows exactly what he's doing and knows that he's going to get off for it because he's a necessary evil. And that's what the entire film is about. So I think that's one a lot of people don't talk about, but man, Nick Cage is good in it.
I feel it, but I feel like I've heard that quote that you said too about being a necessary evil. I must have seen a clip or something on YouTube, but that one sounds like one that I would want to watch.
Yeah,
it's great.
And the second one is in the sequel, I guess, will come out in 2025, so it will be 20 years later. And Bill Skarsgård is going to be in it. So I'm like, oh, Nick Cage and Bill Skarsgård squaring off against each other. This can't possibly go wrong. The director and writer is the same person. Andrew Niccol is coming back from the first one, so it will be hopefully as well done.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you guys, because I know you put out one of the
she knows we
I
put
watched.
Out.
one of the shows that you guys did was on drug movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I didn't hear mentioned was Running with the Devil. Did you guys see that movie? It's not like your typical drug movie. It's basically Nick Cage is in it, and he's with another person, and they have to track down. Have any of you three seen it?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
The premise behind it is Nick Cage has to, I think he's a chef somewhere, and they're like, hey, we need you. You got to do this job. And so he has to track down where the drug is being spliced in with fentanyl. So mm-hmm. he goes through like, okay, what's happening? And they finally get to where that person is cutting it with fentanyl, and they have to, you know, of course, take care of business. But I encourage you guys to watch that movie because it was actually pretty good. Lawrence Fishburne is in it too.
Okay.
And it's just different. It has a different pace and everything. And it's a good one. So it's probably made in the last 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in there.
2019.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Almost 5 years. Yeah, it's pretty good though.
I'll have to check it out. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah. So finally, I can encourage you to watch one there.
All right. So,
all right,
Barbara, do you have any honorable mentions?
Honorable mention would be the blockbuster kind of movie, Con Air, but it's not necessarily it's not the bunny, although I love that scene. It's the scene where
in the box.
It's the scene where you realize like, oh my gosh, he has an opportunity to get off. And he's not going to take it. He's going to get back on and he's going to save the day. So I just like that. I like that his character was just this guy that was basically put in prison for this one moment in time that went wrong. And then has this opportunity to go home to his family. And he's like, nope, I have to save the day. And jumps back in.
Yeah, I'd have got off the plane.
I would have. I'm not going to lie.
Chad,
I needed the free trip.
That's what you told me when you dropped acid, Chad.
No, dude, that's the last pick.
I know. Do you have any honorable mentions?
Oh, honorable mentions. My fault.
Have you seen this show before, Chad?
Would no.
You like to tune in sometime? No.
All the ones have been mentioned. The only other one was Adaptation. Just the opening sequence. The monologue. I think I was with Joe when I saw that in the theater, and I had an absolute meltdown because that's how my brain works.
Mm. Well, that, and he had his hand in my popcorn bucket.
Yeah.
Oh.
Was that and I was like, hole again.
It's like, oh, look, I found the one that didn't pop. And he's like, oh, no.
No. That's just my. Forget it.
No, but like, no.
Never mind.
Yeah. Funny at no, the time, I wouldn't eat popcorn.
So. I was with Joe, and I was not expecting to hear that just complete rant of inside his head. And I'm like, oh God, this is exactly what happens to me when I try to think of something.
Oh no!
And I almost had a mental breakdown right there in the theater.
No, that opening. I agree with Chad though. That opening. Every time I sit down to write anything, it's that negotiation with myself, right? Yeah. Like that entire, I'll get a muffin. You don't need a muffin, you're fat. I agree. I'm with you on Chad. When I watched it in theaters with a couple friends of mine, it was, oh God,
not us.
This. No, well, I didn't. I don't think I knew you all yet.
Well, we were.
Well, some people don't have an inner monologue.
Oh,
and real quick, as we end the show, I promised Barbara, I completely forgot about this. I promised, I don't even know if she remembers it. James, really quick, give me is there any honorable mentions? Because you have to tell a story.
So there's two honorable mentions that I wanted to mention. They're very, very different. One is based on a real crime, a real serial killer, The Frozen Ground. And it's not that it's phenomenally good.
John Cusack's in that, right?
John Cusack's
so good.
In it.
It's not actually a lot accurate either.
No, it's not accurate. No, but the guy was still alive when they made it. He died in prison right after it. But what I like about it is it's not accurate to history. It's very accurate to actually the procedural part. Like, it's not an over-the-top action film. It is very much like the conversations that go on and all that. So that's one that I really enjoy. The other one, though, that is almost heartbreaking and was a lot of people talked about for a while, but it's kind of disappeared because Mandy is over the top and all of that. Joe, Not you, Joe. The movie, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. The one directed by What's-His-Face. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, you know, he plays an ex-con who he ends up hiring this kid who played by Ty Sheridan, who has went on to do other bigger stuff. But yeah, directed by David Gordon Green.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, this kid has a horrible, his family life, his dad's terrible, all of that stuff. And you see Joe, played by Nicolas Cage, slowly start to do like, oh, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to, this kid's here, all of that stuff. And I don't want to go into any lines or anything from it, but it's just a movie where you watch and you could think, oh, this could go over the top. But for the most part, it's really tragic and very almost subdued the entire time of he doesn't want to get involved, but he's got to do something because he can just tell how bad things are getting. And so I wanted to give Joe a shout out because, like I said, a lot of people actually said he should have won an Oscar for that. And then it kind of disappeared.
Brief version. Barbara asked me this question. We'll end on this because it's James. She asked us how we all met, and I was trying to explain it. And then when I got to how you actually met Chad, I realized it's better if James just tells his story. Go.
Oh, okay. And so you're talking about when we were going back to your
apartment. In my apartment, yeah.
Right. So I was, Joe and I were working at the same place. I had got a job there after and he go, oh, you need to meet my friend Chad. It was after we realized we both liked film. I mean, that's mm-hmm. basically what originally brought us together. And we became.
I'd actually met you briefly at a restaurant.
I didn't remember any of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Unremarkable, Chad. Unremarkable.
I didn't say anything, I don't think.
I thought that was Doris Day. Why did you sign her name on my picture? Anyway, so we were walking back, and Chad used to work, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, terrible hours. Like, you had worked the night before or whatever. And so Chad was at Joe's place, and it's like, oh, he may still be asleep. So we get into the apartment, and there were multiple doors. We get to the other door, and Joe opens it and closes it back and looks at me and goes, oh, he's asleep. And then Joe's exact words were, watch this, which Joe has said throughout our friendship for years. Yeah. And usually if I hear watch this, whatever follows is going to be both hilarious and possibly something I'm going to have to put on a police report.
Listen, I got Harlan Ellison to tell me to go fuck myself. But right before it happened, I said, James, watch this.
So he has closed the door very quietly, and Chad is dead asleep on the couch. And all of a sudden, Joe, after saying, watch this, literally basically opens the door and kicks it open like the Kool-Aid man and screams, oh my God, Chad, the blood. Chad was laying perfectly flat. And in my memory, it was something out of like Ghostbusters. He elevated straight up and then somehow flipped in the air and fell flat on the ground. And then I think, if I remember correctly, he after he went, you know, realized there was nothing actually going on, literally looked at Joe and said, you bastard. And I think that's the first major memory I have of them
and
in the same place.
And then we all went to lunch.
We went and had lunch. I think we went and had Mexican, if I remember.
I think we went to lunch. Yeah.
And so that's the first time. But literally, I'll just never forget, oh my God, Chad, the blood. And Chad, bam. Like, if it was a cartoon, he would have hit the ceiling. Like, it was that. Like, I can't get that much air time when I was at my most fit as he got flying off that couch. When Joe kicked open the door and screamed, oh my God, Chad, the blood.
Yeah, sorry about that. She just asked me, and I was like, I can't tell this. James tells us.
No, that's, I mean, that it's burned into my memory because I'm like, I still don't know how he did it. Like, I can't flip off a couch standing up and get that high. It was amazing.
Yeah.
What a way to meet someone for the first time.
That's okay. Barbara, thank you so much. You've done almost an hour and a half with us. Can you believe it was that long?
Yeah, it was fun. I had a feeling it would be. It's Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not the company at all. Jesus.
And by the way, James didn't say Mandy at all.
No, well, I've talked about Mandy so much. And actually, I'll be honest, it's because I love Nick Cage and Mandy. It's not his movie. It's hers.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that. Yeah. Is Mandy kind of a disturbing one? Like Hereditary?
Yeah. Oh,
disturbing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's basically every freak ever on the planet type thing is in that movie. By the way, though, I wanted to mention it since we're talking about Nick Cage, and it gives me an excuse to bring it up. the rumor going around about his next major role. Has anybody heard this?
No.
Television series he may be doing? Chad, you haven't heard it yet either?
No, but
allegedly, he has agreed to do a live-action Spider-Man noir.
What?
It'll be a limited series.
Where do I sign?
I was about to say, no. Listen, and I didn't bring it up during the rest of the show because it's not my favorite Nick Cage role at all. But I think I also like Nick Cage because, honestly, he does roles that if you came – and I can't act to save my life. If you came up to me and say, hey, do you want to play this role? I'd be like, yeah, like Ghost Rider. I can't blame Nick Cage for saying, yeah, I want to do Ghost Rider. And so anytime he signs on to a comic book movie, A, I know he's going to give it his all. And B, I'm like, no, just buy the ticket, take the ride. I enjoy both the Ghost Rider films, not because they're great. I think the second one's better than the first one. I think it's a director issue. But no, I will. So when that's the rumor going around right now. You can Google it. It may turn out to be false. But if it is true that he has agreed to do a limited series live action Spider-Man noir, yeah, sign me up for every episode. Let's
yes.
Go.
And no, anyway, that's the rumor. Nick Cage is one of those actors that you either really love him or really can't stand him. There is no in between. From the people that I've spoken with about him, it's one or the other. But he's just so fun. He really is.
All right. I hate to do this, but we got to wrap it up. Barbara, thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for supporting us. And hopefully we'll find out later this week when we're doing Bonehead Live at Lexington Comic Con, and we'll let you know, and you can come down and we'll let you in for a free taping.
A free taping? Awesome.
A free taping.
Hey. Yeah, we'll wrap you in scotch tape.
And we usually have shots of bourbon before for the audience.
Do we?
Jeez, you guys go all out.
Yeah.
I've never got a shot of bourbon.
You haven't been to one.
Yeah, for some odd reason, it's Scarefest. Yeah, it's Scarefest. Why didn't we do bourbon at Scarefest?
I don't know. I was about to say, everyone I've been to, is it because y'all are worried I'm an alcoholic?
I think I
can't commit to anything.
I don't know why, but I'm always more afraid of breaking the rules of that at Scarefest than I am at LexCon.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why.
Adrian can kick anyone's ass.
Oh, you're not wrong.
Yeah,
I've got a conspiracy theory on why, Joe. When we're not recording, I've got a conspiracy theory on why.
All right. Well, all right. So this has been Bonehead Weekly. Thank you so much, Barbara. We are out. Grrrr.